person able to land a quadruple axel in competition, a jump requiring 4.5 revolutions in the air. Melatin told ABC News he has a hard and fast ritual.
I eat chocolate right before I skate.
In skiing, the downhill race will be held tomorrow. Lindsey Vonn had a successful practice 8 days after tearing a ligament in her knee. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the estate of Joan B. Kroc, whose bequest serves as an enduring investment in the future of public radio and seeks to help NPR produce programming that meets the highest standards of public service in journalism and cultural expression.
It is a brisk morning here on the Augustana College campus, but warmer temps are on the way, and you're just in time for a conversation with this week's guest, Emily Nash from the Quad Cities Symphony Orchestra. I'm Kai Swanson. I hope you'll join us here on WVIK for local radio the way it's meant to be brewed on Saturday Morning Live, portions recorded. Well, Emily Nash, Associate Concertmaster of the Quad City Symphony Orchestra, I make no bones about it. I am a fanboy with all of the members of the symphony. So whenever I get Maestro here or I've had Hannah Holman, I'm still trying to get my hooks into Andrew Parker. Mm-hmm. But I really love the chance to just talk to you folks because you're so amazing. Emily, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So just so for full disclosure, usually I get to see folks like Emily and Benjamin Coelho and all these other for about 35 seconds backstage.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And then I join the audience, and like the rest of the Quad Cities, I thrill to the things that you do together, which is just amazing. And we're going to get to that today. Mm-hmm. Because tonight at 7:30 and then tomorrow at 2 p.m., you're going to be doing something especially extraordinary that we're all so excited about. And that's yet to come. But I want to start at the very beginning. I'm always fascinated by how people who make of music a profession, the stories behind that. Mm-hmm. Where did your journey with music begin and when?
I remember it so clearly. When I was in first grade, I had it was a talent show, some friends that played violin, and they played a duet together in class. And I couldn't believe that. I was like, oh, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. So I begged my parents to play for about a whole year to take lessons, and they finally gave in. And so I started when I was 7 at a Suzuki school close mm-hmm. by my house.
Mm-hmm.
And after my first group class, I told my mom I was going to play for the rest of my life. And I have.
You have?
I have.
That's extraordinary to have it snap into focus that quickly.
Yeah, I never really had a plan B or anything like that. I didn't know how hard it was to be a professional musician either. I didn't have anything really deterring me
mm-hmm.
From that. I just loved the violin from the beginning.
Mm, mm,
and that's kept me going.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's amazing. So, well, then at that age, how did things shift for you? So you started about the instruction. Mm-hmm. Did you at any point go to different schools, or how did that unfold?
Yeah, I first started with just group classes. I didn't have any private lessons at the beginning. And then I figured out Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, but only using one finger on the violin.
Huh.
And so I played it for her, and she's like, why don't you try using, you know, these other fingers so you don't have to move your hand around so much. And I was listening to the CDs, and I was just figuring all the songs out by ear. And then they said, I think she's ready for a private, you know, instructor. And I was just going through all the group classes, eventually kind of aging out of the Suzuki school and going to neighborhood music school in New Haven, Connecticut.
Wow. All right, first thing, Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, that's Mozart, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. And I remember the epiphany I had when I finally figured out that it's the same ABC song, too.
Yes.
So I know. Music is all connected. That's really cool, but I often ask people, because it's rarely the case, right, that when we're in elementary school, that mm-hmm. path just appears before us,
yes.
right? And like me, I'm still trying to figure out my major, you know, I will see what I come up with in the next few years. But people often take those side trips and detours, not that you necessarily did, but what were the other things that you found that caught your attention, imagination, creativity when you were a kid?
It really was music as and it was my escape for all of the difficult times in teenagehood. And, of course I watched movies and things, which interested me, but the constant was always violin playing.
Yeah.
For me, I was very kind of one track.
Yeah.
Of mine.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I did kind of try to decide, do I want to do orchestra or chamber music? And in like youth orchestra, they had a really great chamber program. Mm-hmm. And so I actually played viola a little bit, for scholarships. And so I was doubling up on chamber music groups. I was playing in like two quartets and two orchestras at neighborhood music school. And I really found a love for chamber music. I was able to play with older kids when I was playing viola, so the groups were more advanced, and that was a really great learning experience for me. So I ended up thinking I wanted to be a chamber musician going to college,
mm-hmm.
And instead of orchestra. And I went to U of I in Urbana-Champaign, studying with the Pacifica string quartet.
Yeah,
Simeon Ganatra was my teacher there, because they have a wonderful string quartet.
Yeah.
You know, they're very successful. And then, of course, you have to take orchestra while you're in school. And so I did, and I started liking it more, but I think I didn't really like orchestra in the beginning, which is really ironic because now I do.
Well, yeah. Yeah. And they're very different things, right? Mm-hmm. If you're, especially as a violinist in the orchestra, that's a different approach. That's a different sort of strategy and being part of a section that's part of a broader set and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But with chamber, it always seems like such an intimate conversation.
It is.
And I love to watch musicians when they're performing. And you do still do some chamber work here in the Quad Cities. So,
mm-hmm.
First let's stick with Urbana-Champaign and then we'll get to the other stuff. So you had to do the orchestra thing.
And I eventually started really enjoying it, especially in leadership positions. I really feel like it's a challenge for me, and I like that.
Mm.
I don't like being bored. So I think that's why I like being, you know, section leader. I went to Northwestern for my master's, studying with the Vamoses, and then got into civic orchestra afterwards. And that was where I really started loving orchestral playing.
Yeah. What I really love is there's so many times we run into great musicians who start in the Midwest and then they get drawn to, Curtis and, mm-hmm. and Juilliard and that sort of thing. But somehow the Midwest got its hooks into you. I think that's a fascinating story. How did it get on your radar screen?
It is. So my former teacher, Fiona Murray, I owe so much to her, everything to her. She believed in me when I was a teenager and she really pushed me and didn't give up on me. I owe my career to her.
Yeah.
So she was friends with Samin, my teacher at U of I, and had me take a lesson with her, and she accepted me into her studio. So I ended up out in Urbana. And then I thought I actually wanted to end up back on the East Coast for mm-hmm. my master's because I grew up in Connecticut.
Yeah, right.
So I was auditioning in Boston and New York, took lessons out there to try to get in with the teacher. And the only school in the Midwest that I auditioned for was Northwestern mm-hmm. University mm-hmm. to study with Almeda Vamos. And I just loved her teaching and all of her students. She had such a big umbrella of great violinists.
Yeah.
That she's, you know, that she's taught. And so I decided, okay, I'm staying out here, but I really did actually want to end up in the East Coast.
Yeah, and while you know, you never say never, but I'm grateful that we have you here, right?
I think it's worked out.
I think it's worked out really well. But I'm intrigued by this, Emily. And again, my guest is Emily Nash, Associate Concertmaster for the Quad City Symphony Orchestra. But you talked about this person who had a real impact on you in your teen years. Mm-hmm. And I know that a big part of your professional life is teaching now. How do you bring that experience to bear when you're working with young musicians?
Teaching is more involved than just playing an instrument. I get close. I care about my students. I actually did kind of make my studio smaller mm-hmm. the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. That's been evolving more into my life has been more into performing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But at one time I had 36 students and doing like civic orchestra at the same time mm-hmm. and other per-service orchestras. Mm-hmm. You kind of are maybe an aunt figure to some of them sometimes. And I don't know, they're all special, really special. It takes a lot out of me to teach, actually.
Well, let me shift that for you, please. I'm going to be your PR guy. I think you invest a lot in it.
I do.
Yeah. It's not that it's taking it out of you. It's that you're giving a lot to it. And I say this because I have a family member. She's my cousin's daughter, which technically makes her my cousin, too. But Lizzie Lundeen, who's worked at the Quad City Symphony with some of the youth programs for a long time. And I watched how her string mentors shaped her life. Mm-hmm. And it's a magic, right? Because teachers are always magical, mm-hmm. right? And we revere them. But there's something about that musical expression where it comes down to you being one-on-one
yes.
with someone. And I think that's makes it unique.
You try to pull on their strengths and lift them up and push them a little bit more than maybe they thought they could, make them believe in themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's what I try to take from my other teachers that did that with me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and now you, as you mentioned, the focus is a little more on the performance side. So
yes.
To that end, how did we get our hooks into you at Quad City Symphony Orchestra?
Yeah, I had friends that I just heard Quad City Symphony whisperings with my friends. And like, you know, what's the big deal with this per-service orchestra out in the middle of Iowa? You know, like, what's the big deal? And it had an audition. So I said, I'll take it. And I practice, of course, but not putting too much stress on myself for the audition. So I took it and I won the audition. And then I started playing here. And like, this orchestra is really special.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. It's it surpassed my expectations.
Yeah.
And it was fun. Everybody is like, everyone is so kind here. The volunteers too, mm-hmm. everyone around. Mm-hmm. It matters to have great leadership.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. The conductor, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
He comes really prepared.
Yeah.
And that's not the same in all per-service or not, you know, not all situations. And I really have come to respect that and try to live up to that as well. He expects everyone to come really, really prepared. And that's, I try to be like, I'm ready to play a concert today on the first rehearsal. That's what I try to do.
Yeah, yeah,
And so that's special when he can bring kind of the best in us by example.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm just really nosy here, Emily, but you talked about the audition process, and I'm just curious, what does that entail? And especially I'm curious as a violinist, because, you know, if you're auditioning to be bassoonist, mm-hmm. you know, that's going to be a different kind of a vibe, but an orchestra needs quite a few violins. So not only it's to find your place in the orchestra, but to give them an indication of where that place should be, right? First, second, where within the section. Would you mind telling us about the audition process?
Yes. So when there is an audition, they'll actually say, this is for section violin. Sometimes it says, you know, section first violin or section second violin. or a principal seat, one of the first two seats in a section. So you'll take that audition, and that's if you're lucky enough to actually win the audition, that's where you'll be. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, in my case here, a audition opened up. I was just a section violinist when I first came here. And then the associate concertmaster audition became available. And so then you have a choice to take it. But to sit there, you do have to win an audition. Mm-hmm. It's not just like, mm-hmm. you know, oh, you could just sit there. You have to actually have that title. Mm-hmm. In that process. So they'll give you a list, and they'll post a list of maybe 16 or 18 excerpts on a list before, which that's pretty long.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're all difficult, and you try your best to prepare all of those, and you come out on stage at a specific time, and most auditions now are screened.
Right. And tell us why that is. Because I think that's really interesting.
Yes, because the committee might know you or might have some ideas or biases.
Yeah.
Just as soon as you walk on stage without even hearing you play yet. Yeah. So.
Do you recall offhand any of the works that you did for QCSO for that audition?
For Associate Concertmaster, I did the Swan Lake violin solo. Beethoven 9 was on it. Don Juan was there.
Oh, just a walk in the park.
Schumann, Scherzo. All the hard things.
Oh, and then so I want to talk about that too. This notion of being the associate concertmaster. We're very fortunate to have a wonderful concertmaster at QCSO, yes. Naha Greenholz. But obviously one role is if the concertmaster is away for maybe performance or any other reason at all, then you step in as concertmaster. We'll get to that in a minute. But when Naha Greenholz is here, what role do you take as associate concertmaster?
So my job is to try to make her job really easy.
Ah.
And, you know, we are so lucky. She is a wonderful violinist and person.
Hmm.
So I love having her as a stand partner. Mm. So I sit on the inside of the stand. The outside is closest to the audience. And my job is to turn pages. And this concert actually is very intense with Stravinsky turning. A lot of page turns happening very quickly.
Yeah.
And I'll write things in the music if the conductor has a comment to change something or add a crescendo here. It's my job to really do that in the moment for her. And then be very prepared so I'm not throwing her off with any entrances because we have to bring in the whole violin section and count like crazy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's the role you'll be in tonight and tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Which I find all of it so fascinating, but... So the performance that we're looking forward to tonight, and I'm so excited. It's two things, a world premiere and a very familiar work.
Yes.
So let's start through the lens of the associate concertmaster. On the one hand, when you're thinking about, and maybe what the conductor is telling you, it's got to be a vast universe of difference because there's probably a kind of a canonical idea of how the Rite of Spring is done.
Mm-hmm.
And so the conductor might not have to say too much about, you know, we need a little more, you know, this kind of, and it's still there. But the other work, nobody's ever heard this before. What is that like?
Well, we were lucky enough to have a reading of partially finished a few months ago.
Uh-huh.
And so we got a little taste of motifs and big sections of the work. And so we could read through and feel how that is.
Mm-hmm.
The counting is tricky. It's not like Rite of Spring, but there are dancers. It's a beautiful... I was impressed with the dancers, I have to say. We had rehearsals last night with them. It's a Chinese dance company. The choreographer came up with amazing moves. I was just amazed at how they jump so high. Mm. They land so soft, so graceful, so poised, so strong. They have ribbons on stage that they dance with. They're beautiful. Mm. It really surpassed my expectations with what this work was going to look like.
Well, I'd like to fill in just a little bit of the detail here before we go further, and I want to talk more about it. But the work is called Unearthing the Heart, the Thousand Grottos of Dunhuang by Angel Lam, whose music we heard here last year as a premiere, but not the very first one like this time. Mm-hmm. But what you're describing is, so she is inspired by this physical place in northwestern China that is mystical just to hear about. I mean, these caves and grottos sat for centuries and millennia without really people knowing about them. And then they've been unearthed.
Covered by sand,
yes,
I think.
But they're on the edge of the Gobi Desert. So what I tell people, I've been trying to describe this, is if you remember the third Raiders of the Lost Ark, where they're in the city of Petra, where everything was carved into the stone faces in Jordan. That's kind of what's going on here. But the Gobi Desert had kind of taken over, right? And so they found these things. And inside were these artworks and scrolls and things depicting a time, a very special time in the world's history when Hinduism was coming out of India and becoming Buddhism in China. And so that's all to begin with.
You'll see the dance moves are like the writings on the walls in caves. They have the same posture sometimes. It's really cool.
Well, I want to get to the dancing, which is so cool because thanks to, I think, connections that Mark Russell Smith has professionally, we were able to speak with Zhongmei Li, who is a world-renowned choreographer, and working with dancers from the Nanyi Chen Dance Company. So it's when you think of ballet, in the context of Rite of Spring, you might think Diaghilev and tutus and things like this, right? This is Chinese traditional dance.
Yes.
And a very different feel.
Yeah.
And I think if you've never seen it, like you said, the athleticism is very distinctive. It's really going to be cool. So I'm gushing about this.
Yeah. It's very cool.
What do you we're going to have to take a break in a couple of minutes, but just from the musical side, I was very impressed by the piece that she gave to us last year as audiences and that you gave to us. That was very compelling and told a story about her father and loss and everything else. What do you think about the music this time around?
It's really cool how she does put us into a physical place. We play different techniques on our instruments to sound like wind, starting to unearth, I think, the get rid of the sand off of these places physically. It's beautiful, it's colorful. You'll hear strings sound like some and percussion sound like Chinese instruments sometimes. So it takes you to a different place in the world, and that's really fun, really, really cool.
And a lot cheaper than the airfare, right? So yes. I hope people will enjoy that. I was actually reading an article that there is some concern in China that tourism is just booming here. People really want to see this. And as personal incomes, I mean, the Chinese economy is a little bit stuck right now, but people are able to travel more within China. And so they're almost worried about there's too many people coming to see this. So this might be an environmentally friendly way for all of us to come check it out. And like I said, we're going to take a break here in just a moment. My guest is Emily Nash, Associate Concertmaster of the Quad City Symphony Orchestra. I bet you there's still possibly tickets available. Go to qcso.org. But right now, we'll step aside from Saturday Morning Live portions recorded. Friends, the time is 10:29.
I'm Peter Sagal. The Super Bowl is this Sunday, so as a public service, we'll be talking to the nation's favorite librarian about what book to read while everybody else in your family watches it. That's this week's News Quiz from NPR.
Saturdays at 11 a.m. on WVIK.
Hi, I'm Janice Guidry, a WVIK NPR listener and contributor. I enjoy listening to the BBC News on WVIK.
Hi, David Brancaccio here. I do the Marketplace Morning Report. From jobs to workplace culture to interest rate decisions, innovation, you depend on public radio and Marketplace to provide you with a better understanding of the economy and how it affects your money decisions. But we cannot do it alone. I got to tell you, we need your help to keep reporting. Here's how you do it, and thank you.
Thank you so much. Go to WVIK.org and look for the red donate button.
And we hope you'll do that, because when you do, you keep programs, local radio, local stories like this on the air. And today, well, it's a nice morning to stay close and cozy with your radio. Our high is only going to reach about 32 degrees, and right now we're just about 20 in the Quad Cities. But guess what, friends? By Monday, our high should be near 54 degrees. And it's probably, you know, one of those little fall springs, and we'll get, you know, sucker punched again, right? Exactly. But you know a lot about, and by the way, my guest, Emily Nash, Associate Concertmaster from the Quad City Symphony Orchestra, we'll get into things like weather in just a moment, but I still want to talk a little bit about this piece and impress upon people listening why it's so important. You get tickets and go either tonight at the Adler Theater in Davenport or tomorrow afternoon at Centennial Hall on the Augustana College campus, because, you know, you as an orchestra have made world premieres where we've been part of a commissioning group of maybe four, three, whatever orchestras. And we haven't always been the first one to get the performance, but this time we are.
Yes.
Have you done many world premieres before in your career?
I have done a fair amount. I play with another orchestra in Chicago.
No, and tell us about that.
It's called the Chicago Sinfonietta, and they are, I think, the most diverse orchestra in the country. And they bring new works. Works by women, works by, you know, just other composers, minority composers, musicians. They have soloists come in that have won, like, Sphinx competition. And they do a lot of world premieres. I just played one 2 weeks ago.
Really?
And that one, actually, there's a cellist in the orchestra that's a New York Times bestseller. Edward Casey Moore, Kelsey
Get
Moore.
Out.
And I don't know if you saw on Netflix The Supremes at Earl's All You Can Eat, but he wrote this novel.
Really?
And then they, you know, they made a movie out of it on Netflix. And then we had the composer from the movie play with the Chicago Sinfonietta. And so I read, to prepare for that concert.
Of course.
I read his book. And watch the movie, and then we played the suite from the movie. So that's kind of cool. That was really cool.
We are so lucky, I mean, to have Chicago as close as we do.
Yes.
I was up there last weekend and rode the Amtrak, so I didn't have to pay parking. I left my car in Princeton.
Score.
Yes, absolutely. but we're fortunate to have all these ensembles, the Sinfonietta. There is, of course, the Lyric. There's so many ways to experience music, and not just classical orchestral music. Every genre imaginable.
Yes.
And like you said, this cellist, you meet some very interesting people, but I think you met someone very interesting through one of these orchestras, and that was your spouse. Or how did you meet? Did you meet at school? How did you guys meet?
We met on the train.
Really?
On the L in Chicago. So we were both, it was the first day that Civic Orchestra was meeting our orientation. And I'm on the train and this guy's looking at me, and I could see in the reflection of the glass, you know, he's definitely looking at me. I look his way and he kind of looks away. We end up going to the same place.
Did you guys both have violin?
Yeah, we both have cases.
Classic.
And he thought, in my case, I like to pack small because I don't like carrying heavy things. Mine's small. And he thought I was some beginner taking lessons just because it wasn't a legit case to him.
And he's a violist, so his is a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
And we should introduce him, Bruno
Vaz da Silva.
Yeah.
He was a violist here for, I don't know, eight years or so.
Yeah.
And we can get into life stuff because life, you know, evolves and grows.
Sure.
But we met on the train, ended up going to Civic. And seeing each other there, and you know, he's Brazilian, and he's blessed with very nice skin. And I thought he was 10 years younger.
He wasn't one of these pallid, you know, Midwesterners, right?
So I thought he was lovely. Very young, and he did ask me out like three times before I finally gave in.
Because you thought he was too young.
Yes.
Oh, that's a great story.
So Yeah, he took me out dancing, samba dancing, and
came
over. Yeah, we've been married for 12 years.
Oh, that's a riot.
Yeah.
That's a riot. Do you get to perform together very often? Or?
We do. We play in a quartet together.
Oh, you do. Okay, good.
And so that's around the Chicago area.
Yeah.
And we do events together. Sometimes we play chamber music together. Actually, the chamber music concert that we're playing here in March.
Yeah, because he's come back here.
Yes.
Right. It's wonderful to see him. And of course, your beautiful child.
Yes, so, Natalie.
Yeah. And with two amazing musicians as parents, how much choice are you going to give her?
I know. We've talked about that because it's like, I want her to enjoy herself with music.
Yeah.
There's some self-discipline that is there, consistency, but I don't want to be overbearing with the music. So she plays violin.
Yeah.
She has a different teacher. It's not me or Bruno.
Mm-hmm.
And she does Suzuki group classes and private lessons. And she's on her 30th day of a 100-day practice challenge.
Ooh.
But she decided to do that herself. So that's not like we're forcing her to do it.
Now, how does Dad feel that she gravitated towards violin? Could viola be in the future, maybe? Or
I think viola could be in the future. It's funny because, the smaller the instruments get, they sound a little bit more like toys. Mm-hmm. And so small violins sound a little bit better than small violas.
I can imagine.
And so she's starting on the violin.
Yeah.
But I'm sure he's going to, try to work his magic and take her to the dark side, as he says.
Well, what I find so compelling is, I've been doing these concert conversations and we always sneak in some biography about the composers. Hmm. And there's so many stories of composers. And the one that most comes to mind is George Frideric Handel, whose parents did not want him, or at least one parent did not want anything to do with music. And they wanted him to go to the university and study law, or at least he did. And they had the kind of snooker dad so that he could get any musical instruction at all.
Yes.
Yeah. And there's so many stories like that, who doesn't want a lawyer or a doctor or something?
Bruno was in law school.
Was he really?
In Brazil. And he decided, I'm going to quit and go to the United States and do music.
Oh.
Which is like, that's pretty wild.
Yeah.
His story is very interesting.
Well, we got to get him on the show sometime.
I know. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, his background is really
very
unusual.
Hmm.
He started music at 17.
Oh, wow. I was going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting on both ends, because I have to say that your story I find very compelling, of seeing that clear path so early on.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of rare, but also for professional musicians, I mean, that's ancient, right?
Yes.
17 to get involved in
that's quote unquote too late,
Yeah. Well, I'm glad he's breaking the mold for that.
Yes.
Coming back to this concert just for a little bit, and I'm what I find so exciting is that no frame of reference whatsoever. I mean, anymore, just about anything you play, even some newer things.
For Angel Lamb.
Yeah, for Angel Lamb's work, is that you can, and I will do this as I'm getting ready for the concert conversations. YouTube's got everything. I mean, the audio fidelity may not be great, but at least you can get a sense for what's happening and yada, yada, yada. But this is so exciting. It's kind of like, I'm having a hard time coming with a description, like traveling someplace you've never been, nor have you ever seen photos of. I mean, and discovering something. What is it like to then present that?
In rehearsal, we're all kind of learning together, including Mark and the dancers, to put it all together to make sure the tempo works for the dancers and the timing between movements. So we were working on that, last night as well. To present, a new work, any work, you have to, luckily we have the composer there, so we can ask her anything.
Right.
Which is so nice. That's, that's a gift, because then you're not having to really guess. She can say, this can be a little faster, this can be a little slower.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then, we have this quote unquote famous Quad City string sound. Mark always asks us to really play more. And so there's a lot of that happening. It's a very exciting exciting piece.
Well, it is a distinctive sound. And I wish I try to tell friends who have not yet discovered the QCSO, listen, you got to go and check this out. And then go hear some other symphony orchestras. And you're going to realize how special we have it right here.
Yeah, right? I think it's proof that, you know, this orchestra, most of the musicians travel here.
Yes, to right. play. And you're from the Chicago area. And we've got folks who come from Texas and then
and we
New
stay
York
here for, you know, 4 days at a time. And, you know, why do we keep coming back? Because it's not convenient to travel.
No.
And it's because of the special sound that the Quad Cities has.
Yeah, yeah. My guest is Emily Nash, and you were just talking about how great it is to have the composer Angel Lamb present so you can go right to the source. Well, here at WVIK, when we go right to the source, that means Dr. Roald Tweet and Rock Island Lines. It's time for this week's episode of Roald Tweet and Rock Island Lines.
This is Roald Tweet on Rock Island. On April the 1st, 1980, a federal judge ordered the liquidation of the great Rock Island Lines. Local citizens who had long since stopped traveling by rail flocked like vultures to bid on odds and ends of memorabilia for basement bars. A railroad buff friend bought a collection of plates, cups, silverware, and napkins from the Rock Island Rocket Diner, and now pretends to serve train meals at home. It won't wash. It's like visitors from Montana who take home small bottles of river water and claim it's the Mississippi. The train itself was a part of the meal. I was 6 when I first accompanied my parents to the dining car for breakfast on a trip to Chicago. Our table was covered with a thick white tablecloth under a silver vase with a single flower. And at each place were more spoons and forks than I had ever seen for one person. For a boy used to drinking out of store-bought jelly glasses, this was being in a fairy tale. Momentarily, I changed from a restless child into a perfect young gentleman. Do you remember those dining car waiters in stiff white uniforms? I still don't know how they were able to pick up the slips on which we had written what kind of eggs we wanted, set the plates down perfectly, pour coffee into bouncing cups from a foot up, and whisk the plates away at the end, all the while staring straight ahead in some other direction as if their arms were not connected to their heads. Were we being treated as if we were rich and not to be looked at directly, or as poor people beneath notice? The cups and plates, the silverware and linens, the candlesticks and marmalade bowls that once graced the Rock Island Line's dining cars are now scattered among scavengers. The dining cars themselves are torched to scrap. A few may still sit on narrow city lots as short-order restaurants, embarrassed to be there. When the last dining car serves the last meal on the final run of the last American railroad, a special grace, a certain elegance, will have disappeared from the lives of the common people. Sic transit gloria mundi, so passes away a glory from this world.
Rock Island Lines with Roald Tweet is underwritten by Augustana College, Rock Island, Illinois.
And we get to hear it here on WVIK 90.3 FM because folks just like you have said local radio is something we want to support. And they pop over to WVIK.org and they just happen to see the bright red donate button in the upper right-hand corner of the screen and they become members of the station. And we're grateful for that. And on a day like today, with my guest being Emily Nash, Associate Concertmaster of the Quad City Symphony Orchestra, we are so very grateful for all the people who attend and support the symphony because, again, I alluded to it before, Emily, a lot of us grow up here and we don't realize what a terribly special gift it is to have an ensemble of this quality and reach. Yeah. Which is so amazing, but also great chamber opportunities too. So let's talk a little bit about that.
So I have a concert in March at the Figgy. It's the Up Close series.
Yes.
With the Quad City Symphony. And this particular program, I actually came up with like about 2 years ago. And, you know, put it, you know, gave the program to the people who plan everything. And they said, you know, this season we're booked, but maybe next season we can put it on. So it's really special because I was playing The Whale. It's a movie. It was like a live screening in Chicago. And Caroline Shaw.
That's the new film. Brendan Fraser, is that the one? It's not that old of a film. It's just a couple of years old, right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt.
No, it was like, two or three years ago.
Yeah.
And Caroline Shaw was the composer, is the composer for that, one of the composers for that movie. And I was like, wow, you know, I've heard her name before with other works, and I did a deep dive in some of her other compositions because I knew it. Like, I heard she won some huge competition for composing years ago. And so I came across Blueprint. It's a quartet piece, and it's kind of her stuff is modern, minimalistic, and sometimes she warps pitch, and so I have like a physical reaction, like get dizzy from from it sometimes, and it's so cool and fun.
Yeah.
So that was like the genesis. That's the middle of my Venn diagram for this program. And she loosely based Blueprint off of Beethoven's 6th quartet.
Oh, wow.
So it's very loose. It's just, she said, like, structurally basic structures. Mm-hmm. And there's like one quote in there from Beethoven 6. So we're going to start with the Beethoven and then play Blueprint. And then I was also looking into, you know, where did the name Blueprint come from? And she was looking into Japanese ink. It's very deep blue. And so then I started looking, what's blue in Japanese? What can I, put together with link up with this work. And I remember playing, Philip Glass's, one of the movements from a string quartet number 3. And this was actually written for a movie, Mishima. And it's about a Japanese author, his life, and some of his writings. And so this is where I get like super dorky. I just love this stuff. So there is a movie, and I did watch it. It's very dark, I have to say. Okay. Don't watch it with kids. But it really helped me get into the psyche of this author. Which
is fascinating.
And so that's the name of Philip Glass's string quartet number 3, Mishima. It's off the movie. And then, you know, I'm thinking Madame Butterfly, Puccini, and then I found, because that's Japanese, I found Puccini wrote a couple works for string quartet, which I did not know before. And so we're playing one of his minuets for string quartet and another piece that was written on its own, Chrysanthemums.
Oh, wow.
And that one Puccini actually wrote in one night after his friend from Spain passed away. And it's beautiful. Chrysanthemums are in Italy, they're only used for funerals or graves.
Oh, wow.
So that's the...
But there's
symbolism.
Also a tie to Japan because that was known as the Chrysanthemum Throne, and that was the symbol of the empire, the imperial family, at least. Yeah. So it's all, wow.
It's all yeah, I really, you know, I like to thread things together this way. It's actually, I have so much fun putting programs together like this.
Well, and I love hearing stories about how programs get put together. And friends, just so you know, you can find all kinds of information about the Up Close series too at qcso.org. So as you're checking out for your tickets either tonight or tomorrow, you can pop over and see the Up Close series and you'll find out all the full details on this. What is the name of the quartet, that the performers?
We don't have an official name. It's going to be Naha Greenholz, concertmaster of Quad Cities. It's going to be me, my husband Bruno is playing viola, and Hannah Holman.
talk about an all-star cast.
I know. Good heavens. I did request all of those players.
Oh.
And I'm spoiled I get to play with them.
Well, and it's going to be a wonderful, wonderful concert and a great setting at the Figge Art Museum. So, yeah, what a wonderful thing that you're doing for us. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
We've been talking all kinds of stuff about music, but now that you've been in Chicago for a while, and I know you're very busy, you and your husband, and usually you're working all the time when you're not taking care of that lovely daughter of yours. What kinds of things do you like to do in Chicago when you do get a few minutes to kick back?
It can be something very simple that like I took my daughter sledding. There's this giant hill near my house and we had a blast.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm kind of like, I think kind of old at heart and just like the simple life, because I feel like the musician part of me is so, it could be chaotic, a lot of things happening at once. I have to learn so much music. And it all, of course, happens at the same time.
Yeah.
You can't time most of the concerts that you're hired for.
Yeah. Well, now that you mention that, though, I mean, when I went to college here, a lot of people came from Chicago and they tell me about sledding. You guys don't know anything about sledding hills. I mean, you come out to Lincoln Park in Rock Island, or we'll find some good sledding hills for you. And you bring your daughter down and we'll do all that kind of stuff. Now, just because I'm nosy and because you're a very interesting person, do you get much chance to read? And if so, have you read anything cool lately?
So I don't read that much, but I wish I did, because I read that one book, The Supremes, at Earl's All
Yes,
You Can Eat,
right,
in preparation for the concert. And I was like, I just love reading. I can't believe I was able to carve out time for this. If you just put your phone down, you know, then
it's like you
have so much time.
Well, do you want to know what my trick is for that?
Yeah,
just so you know, we actually started a little book club at work, and fiction, because all of us are reading too much nonfiction professionally anyway, right? Mm-hmm. So the only rule is you can only suggest something that is actually fiction. Mm-hmm. And we're all working at college, and you'd think we would have the discipline to do it. Well, we don't. We need this to enforce the discipline.
Yes.
You know? And all of us are cramming at the last minute, you know? So that's why we made it a no guilt book club. But see if you can find a fun, there's some great libraries up in your neck of the woods, and see if you can find a book club. And it just gives you the discipline, the oomph.
Yeah,
to make sure
I
reading
think it's
stuff.
Wonderful
to
read. And I learn so much and get different perspective, and just I love using my imagination.
Right. What about other things? Do you guys get a chance to take in any movies or series or things like that? I'm always looking for recommendations. So.
I mean, one series that I just started, which I thought was hilarious, was Righteous Gemstones.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
But
I'm
not very far in. I think I'm 3 episodes in. But it's made me laugh.
Well, of course. That's what we need right now.
But
right?
I don't watch too much TV. I really practice a lot.
Well, tell us about that, because I mean, I think we often forget that when we walk into the Adler Theater or Centennial Hall and we are just awash in this wonderful talent and artistry, everything that goes into that. So let's just say, as a for instance, this world premiere, Angel Lamb, ballpark how that worked into your practice regimen?
So I'll have anywhere between one concert program, and the most I had was 8 in 1 week, different programs, which that was really hard to keep up with and to stay afloat. But I will spend a lot of time, like hours, reading up on anything I can about the performance, because we didn't have a video to watch or something to listen to for this. Mm-hmm. There are metronome markings, so I will practice with the metronome marking that's on the page, so I am going to be close to whatever Mark is doing.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, I mentioned earlier that I stopped teaching as much. Mm-hmm. I only have 8 students now, as opposed to 36 that I had before, to perform more. And my life kind of shifted after my daughter got into kindergarten and started school. So now I'm able to practice, you know, from 7 a.m. until she gets home. Mm-hmm. And then I can still spend time with her when she comes home.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's much better balanced lifestyle for me right now.
Sure.
But I still am practicing, I would say, 5 hours in a day, probably. And then, of course, there are rehearsals and concerts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Other things to show up.
And then, so how many other, I just find it amazing, and sorry to be nosy, but how many other performances are you prepping for right now, in addition to what you've been doing for this week?
You know, I've tried to find the ways to organize this, and I write out all my concerts in a notebook on, per month on one page, and then the next month is the other page, so I can kind of just have an overview. So right now, I would say about 10 are kind of... Wow. Being rotated in my mind. Some are more pressing than others, of course.
Yeah.
But I have, you know, 2 concerts next week, different programs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm starting to get the chamber music concert,
right,
you know, under my fingers. So it really depends, but it's the busy time right now.
Well, and frankly, it makes it so much more special for me and me more grateful that you will take some time to come and chat with us about stuff
of
like
course.
This. It's really cool. I was thinking as you're talking, so we had an experience last September. My spouse and I went on a wonderful bike adventure in Austria, and they give you a little app that tells you where to turn here, there, and everything else. Well, because I'm me, I took a wrong turn, right? And I'm so grateful that we did. It was a little village called Lunz am See, and way above the Danube, not quite the Alps, but we're talking what an Illinois kid would call mountains, right?
Yeah.
We're way up there. And there's this mirrored lake with mountains behind it, and we wouldn't have seen it if we didn't take that wrong turn. And I'm zeroing in on that emotion as I think about this weekend, because I have a feeling that whatever it is, it's going to be breathtaking.
It will be.
But to have never seen it, or in this case, heard it before. Well, I've seen it because of the dance as well.
Yeah, I kind of think of life now as, right, of course, you know, your perspective changes over time.
Sure.
And evolves, but life is kind of just one big experiment. And I like to experience things and then find out most of the time, that was really cool.
Yeah.
And live with a little less fear, you know, of playing something new, for example, a new work.
Well, I got to have you back because this is another great topic we could be talking about. Yeah. You know, we will build something up in our heads and, you know, I don't really want to do that. I don't want to really, you know,
what
but then after we've done it, it's a phenomenal thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so many other doors open up because of this one thing you cracked open. You know, it's that one wrong turn that you took.
Yeah, right. Well, I know it was never a wrong turn for you, but I'm so grateful that you opened up that invitation to audition for the Quad City Symphony Orchestra.
Me too.
And I'm grateful for what you and Bruno have shared with us and will continue to share with us. But unfortunately, we're at that point that always just drives me crazy that we're going to run out of time. Before we do, though, I just wanted to be nosy one more time, as mm-hmm. if I haven't been already. You've had a chance to come to the Quad Cities a few days at a time,
mm-hmm.
and you're usually extremely busy when you're here. But have you developed any QC favorites, things that you like to do when you come down?
I'm a fan of the Red Band sandwich, breakfast sandwich.
Girlfriend.
That is really well done. Really delicious.
It is. I'm just going to say, enjoy it now, because I used to love that. But now, I don't know if it's something about my aging, digestive system. That's like a whole day's commitment, because I will eat that sucker and I need a nap, because it is so good and so rich.
It's
but
delicious.
You've discovered Red Band. Thank you for that tip. What else? Is there something else you like?
I've befriended my Airbnb host,
which
actually they know you. I don't know if I can say their names
well,
on the air, but they're so nice. And it almost feels like when I come here, I'm like visiting family at this point. So it's... there's like a community that I feel like I'm a part of here.
Well, I think it's part of the territory of being a grandpa, but it's also been a pleasure to watch your little girl come here over time. I know she can't come
Thank
all
you.
The time,
yeah, yeah.
but she's been sort of adopted into the family too, so we're grateful for that. But more than anything else right now, I'm just grateful to my guest, Emily Nash, Associate Concertmaster for the Quad City Symphony Orchestra, and thank you for your time.
Thank you,
Ken. Well, thank you, and I'll be seeing you later tonight, probably for just 15 seconds, but we'll see. But we want to tell you a little bit about the forecast for today. It's going to stay kind of chilly. Our high is going to reach about 32. Right now, we're talking about 24 degrees in the Quad Cities. But it's going to be increasing clouds. Then tomorrow, the clouds are going to gradually move out. Our high will get near 40 degrees. And then Monday, partly sunny, high of 54. Ahead on WVIK, it's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Be sure to join us next week when our guest will be Dr. John Hurdy from the Augustana Choir right here on Saturday Morning Live. You can find our podcast at WVIK.org or tune into Quad Cities NPR, WVIK 90.3 FM and HD in Rock Island. The time is 11 o'clock.